Well, there's a lot of things to that too. You could tell how much you're paying for stuff. And that's coming. When that depression comes, that's when you've got to know all your culture. You've got to know everything. Like you said, we can't go hunt moose and all this. That's gonna happen. And therefore, I'd like to have, like I talked to the others on that potlatch today, there was one guy, Moon, just brought up a good point there. But there's a lot of things to that too, and I want to keep it going, keep trying. I wanted somebody to help me do all this, but I've got nobody to help me this. I've got no time. It's just like I said that the other day, but some of you weren't here. This one guy talking about the lady talking about it's we got the land and we got the money. What are we bitching for? We never got nothing. Another one says about the Pioneer Home. That part I didn't like. And I don't like it. I'm going to put it in that in paper. I'm going to wait for another couple of days and see if anybody put any in. I'm going to put that in that in paper. And he's a good friend of mine, too. One of my best friends. So I'm going to just tell him, you're no friend of mine no more. You're talking about my people like that. All them things should be brought up. We got leaders up there. And what are they doing? They're the one that's supposed to do it. I spoke about that. And nobody never answered me. So I'm going to just take it in my own hands, just like trapping. Same thing as trapping. I got a registered trap line down there. I can't stop people from going there. There's no way. And you got to have a permit to go up there. I got a permit. I notice a lot of them people don't have a permit. They're still going in there. What kind of law we got? I don't know. This thing is just what we've got to do. We've got to work together. A lot of people say, oh, we train our kids at home. No, they don't. I know a lot of them. And every chance I get, I talk to the kids. I brought some of the students to the potlatch tonight, and they said to me, and they wrote me a letter, and said they learned one heck of a lot from me. And some of them was 40 years old. And he said he learned one heck of a lot. He said he didn't know all these things. His folks never told him. There's a lot of things to that. Because I've been around old people, I know anything get you, you just name it, I can tell you. I can tell you every hill down there has got a name down there. And all them lakes, it's got a meaning to it. Something happened here. Man got killed over there, or he froze his foot, or something like that. It's got a name. That's what we're working on. We're working on that this morning. And that's a good point you brought about our culture. That's one good thing, you know, you've got to, and I want that thing to go on and on. And that's about all I got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Luke. Well, I think we'll take a break for 5 or 10 minutes and have some coffee. I think we've got some there, and you're all invited to have some. And then we'll start again and see if anybody has any further thoughts. A word before we all depart.
We have the name of one person. We have a Philip Pennington. for all our relations, the soil, land, water, air, animals, plants, traditional peoples and the elders, and the unborn generation. I'd like to make this statement I made up just a little while ago, and I have it before me. My name is Philip Pennetack, and I was born in Nome, Alaska, and I now live here in Fairbanks. And well, I'd like to shed some light on dark history of Anxa. Anxa has its roots in the 1867 treaty accession, which was negotiated between Russian Privy Council and United States Secretary of Interior. Anxa is a federal law that was passed by United States government. All laws, both federal and state, pertaining to Alaska are based on the acceptance of the Treaty of Cession. The Treaty of Cession was merely a transfer of commercial interests in Alaska, not the sale of Alaska. This fact has always been misinterpreted, and in high school it's been taught that Alaska was sold by Russia to the United States, but it is not so. The Treaty of Cession did not give the United States government right to assert jurisdiction over Alaska's lands and its original inhabitants. Yet despite this fact, the United States government have imposed laws on its indigenous peoples. There was no consent of the native Alaskans during the formulation of the 1867 Treaty of Cession, nor were there any consent of the native people during the passage of all laws imposed upon its native peoples. All laws imposed upon us, including ANCSA and IRA, Statehood Act, are illegal and violate our human rights under international law. Such human rights that we have is right to self-determination, and how are we to live our lives, and our way of life fits the cycles of nature. We Native people need to be approached as a nation. Our nation is within the people, within us people as natural world peoples. We are nations of human beings which develop governments, religions, cultures, and economies that fit the activities of the cycles of nature. So why should we worry about 44 million acres and the confusing stipulations of ANCSA when we can claim all of 375 million acres of Alaska and make negotiations with the world as family of nations in Alaska? Koyana, Masi, thank you.
Thank you, Philip. That was very well put. Thank you very much.
Is there any questions?
No? No? Thank you. Well, we reconvened just to see if there were any other submissions, and besides the one we've just heard, are there any other people that would like to say anything this afternoon? Yes, please.
My name is Anna Starr, and I'm talking about the land that my mother inherited from her grandfather. But and my dad tried to start a group claim for the land there, because there were maybe one other family that they can claim the Michumina-Kantishna area close to the national parks, and they had this land, this land allotment from my grandfather for over 40-something years, and they lived trapped on there every winter, and they lived there sometimes during the summer when I was a child. But then the BIA, about 20 years ago, asked them for the native allotment that they had, and so they gave it to them without realizing they should have made a copy of it. And they haven't said anything about it lately, but they, but when my dad tried to get this land claim thing for our family, he was refused. And I wondered why that was so, because they have legitimate claim to that land. They were peoples that lived there for thousands of years, probably, or more, you know, because they have a geese house up there that's been carved out of natural rock, black rock. And, what I'm asking now is what can happen to those people that claim that land there? And they had a lot, native allotment on there already. But when my mother died, she didn't sign it over to her children. She died too soon. And I wondered, can we still get that land after, you know?
I can't answer that, but Mr. You might ask Mr. Mike Wallery of Tanana Chiefs. He's a lawyer, and...
we did, and they haven't said anything yet. You know, well, they said we refused the land there for... my father tried to get land there for his children, you know, and they haven't come through with that yet. They said they refused. We were in a group, you know. It had to be 25 people of different families who applied for that. We're 25 people, I think.
Well, I can't answer the question. I'm glad you raised the problem with me, because it's something that I'm... the kind of thing I'd like to know about in compiling my report, but I can't answer individual legal questions during the course of this work.
Okay, this is all I have to say.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Ruth Ridley, and I'm from Eagle originally, and I've lived here in Fairbanks since 1967, and I work at the university at the Language Center. And I think the main problem with ANGSA is that I think when they wrote up the bill that they should have stuck a lawyer alongside of it, so that people... I know that we have a lot of questions that we want answered, and usually people don't have the money to go and hire a lawyer. And then another thing, we have had seminars after seminars and meetings, and it's cost a lot of money to bring people from the villages, and these people that have organized these meetings never have any answers for our questions. And sister. And I think that when they wrote up the bill, it was a big problem that they drop in our lap, and a lot of people are watching and waiting to see us goof it all up. And I really feel that if we work together, and not only just here in the state of Alaska, we should get together with people from Canada and from the lower 48. And like I had the Athabascan Languages Conference last year at the university, and that was one of the things I was hoping to gain, that we could have a Athabascan organization where we could learn from the native people in the lower 48 and also help out the Canadian while they're going through their Land Settlement Act from what we've gone through. And I guess that's
Tell me a little bit about the language, state of the languages here. Are there bilingual programs in the schools here for the Athabascan native villages and towns?
You mean here in Fairbanks?
Well, tell me here in Fairbanks and then outside of Fairbanks.
We don't have any language programs, I don't think. No, I shouldn't say that. I think like University Park has a new PIAC and UPIC language programs going for the younger people. And then the other district that's going real good is the Koyukon language is going good. And then they're having a 2-day meeting in Arctic Village, and that's working with the Gwich'in area, which is Arctic Village, Fort Yukon, and that area. And then I was talking to some people from the Iditarod School District, and we were talking about getting a language commission going so that we would be the, there'll be like, we have to start before October, and then there would be grants available to our, we would be the number one organization to be able to get the grants before the school districts and everybody else. And a lot of times when the school districts, I think, apply for money for languages in the process, if the school was going to get 40,000, by the time it got channeled through the school district, you ended up with like 30,000, or it got lost along the way for overhead and that kind of stuff. And so we're hoping to get our language commission going before October, so that we could start applying for grants for next year. And I think we might channel it through the language center, where we just hire a bookkeeper and they take care of all that. And then we try to figure out what things need to be done in certain languages. Like my language from Eagle, we don't have a language program going there, because we have like the village and the town, and then there's like, it's a combination of white kids and Indian kids, so we always have a lot of problem trying to get a language program going. But it's looking better.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you very much, uh-huh. Ms. Ridley. Well, does anyone else wish to make a presentation this afternoon? I should say I went over to the monthly elders' lunch at the church today, and some of them were talking quite spontaneously about their lives on the land, about land claims, and it was a very useful opportunity for me to round out what I've heard at these meetings downtown here with conversations with some of the older people at the church, and so it's been a good day. Well, is there anybody else who'd like to speak this afternoon? Well, if not, I think what we will do is, it's getting on for 4, we'll adjourn until 7 o'clock tonight to see if anyone wants to speak then, and then we'll have a final session tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. But let me thank you again for coming and for the presentations that were made this afternoon. They were all very interesting and very, very worthwhile. And I thank you again. And if you're back here at 7, we'll see if there's anyone else who wishes to speak. And in any event, we'll carry on tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock here for our final session. Thanks then. to speak to Mary about that. I don't know exactly what the plan is. I think that for June, we're going to Holy Cross. We're going to Southeast next month, and then going to Holy Cross and Galena in June. Oh, yeah. In July, she wanted to go from Tanana to Fort Yukon by boat to stop at the fish camps and then hold a meeting at Fort Yukon. How would that be? If you'd like to just put your remarks on the record, now we you can just take a chair here and they'll be recorded. We don't have very many here tonight, but we had a very good turnout at the university on Tuesday. The Alaska Native students came, and then we had a meeting here yesterday that about 20 people spoke to, and then another meeting today that went on all day, to which about another 20 people spoke. If there are any that would like to speak tonight, this is why we arranged this meeting. Just give us your name again for the record, Philip.
Well, my name's Philip Penatak. I spoke earlier, and I'd like to make correction of a statement I made earlier, and I said that when the Treaty of Cession of 1867 was negotiated by Russian Privy Council and the Secretary of Interior, I was incorrect. It was negotiated between the Russian Privy Council and the Secretary of State, not Secretary of Interior. And this is just one correction that I just wanted to make. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Cruikshank.
I didn't plan to say anything before this meeting, but after I seen that piece in the newspaper back 2-3 days ago, that really hit me in a bad spot. That piece about the pioneers' home. It seems like that they don't want natives down there. And I don't know why. Because I understand that pioneers' homes were people that worked for the state in the early days. And if there's any people that really did work hard and helped to develop this country, it was the natives. I was 80 years old, man, at my last birthday. And with the exception of a few years that I spent in the service of my country, I spent all my life up here in Alaska. I've seen changes take place. I can remember way back when I was a youngster, steamboat days. We'll start with the steamboat. Steamboats used to travel on the Yukon, and the people that work on the steamboat, one of the most important jobs was a river pilot. And one of the best river pilots they had were those natives. And they were some of the best pilots they had, and they were quite a group of men. I remember them when I was a youngster. They had nice blue uniforms on with brass buttons and white shirt and black necktie and the captain's hat. Oh, they really look good. All we kids used to look up to them. Anyway, that was part of their job on the steamboats, the pilot. And then the crew, the men that run the boat, they were natives. Fellas who handled freight and everything, they were natives, most of them. And of course, those steamboats burnt a lot of wood those days. And most of that wood had to be cut along the Yukon River. And a lot of it was cut by natives. One of the best known woodcutters in the early days, of course nowadays it don't mean a doggone thing, where people don't even hardly use an axe nowadays. But one of the best axemen in the country in the early days there on the Yukon was a native by the name of Woodchopper Joe. He was well known and well liked all over. He would start in the spring of the year or late, or whatever time he comes from his trap line, then he starts cutting steamboat wood. By summertime, he'd have a big pile of wood there. He was well known for that. All the steamboat men knew that if he was on a job, they sure would have enough wood. He was one of the well-known ones. And then those steamboats, they came up the Yukon River, and of course they were loaded down with freight. The freight was for the different mining camps scattered all over the interior, some down the mouth of Keokuk, Chandler, and all over. And it's got to be relayed from there by small boats, by barge and horse. And the men best qualified to do that job those days were those natives. They did all that. With horse and barge, handled that freight to get it up to the mining camps. And even then, sometime, they freeze in before they get all the stuff up to the mining camps. Then it's got to be moved by dogs, by a dog team. And that's where the natives come in with their dog team. They took all the stuff out to the mining camps with their dog teams. They did all that hauling, freighting with dogs, natives. And some of the best known male men in the early days were those natives. They ran the mail with dog teams. I'd just like to mention one or two of them. There was John Stephen, Port Yukon, and Kivar Riley, over on Beaver. And here in Fairbanks, Harry Riley. He was one of the last of the old-time mail carriers. I just mentioned them to bring out the fact that those natives carried mail, and besides all the other work they did in the early days. And then the country was opening up in the early days, mining camps. You got to have men to work those camps. And some of the best known miners are natives. They learn and they turn out to be real good. One of the best known, I'd like to mention, was Mr. Turok Newman. He was well known in the interior. Well, he was born and raised where they were prospecting and doing some mining in the early days. He was raised right up with it. And he was one of the best miners there was in the country. Anybody had a good piece of ground, they wanted to get him to work. Oh, they used to fight sometimes to get him to work. Anyway, he was the one that drove the point that made that big discovery over in Chandler in the early days. He was well known. Until later years, he was well known, well loved by everybody that knew him. He used to sit down and tell stories to the young people about the early days and how it used to be. He was well known, as I say, and loved by everybody that knew him. Well, the native people, they did all that work. As I say, in the early days there, dog team, boat, cottonwood, carrier mail, freight, and everything else. And then in later years, our country got tangled up in World War I, II, and Vietnam. And our Alaska Natives, when our country called on them, they did their share, like the rest of the Americans. And through the services of these, our people, those Natives, I think they should at least be entitled for these old-timers to spend their last